Right. Good afternoon. I'm Tricia Pauletta. I'm a partner at Harris, Wilcher & Grannis, and I am not a media lawyer, so I'm looking forward to this panel because I think we're all going to learn something out of this. The title is Government Regulation of Media Over the Top, and I think Brian and others teed that up. The commissioner teed that up over the top in terms of perhaps excessive regulation. But there is another proceeding at the FCC that is almost as controversial, and that's in the media landscape and the proposal to reclassify not common carriage or broadband access, but reclassify over-the-top providers as being included in the multi-channel video programming distributor category, MVPD, as we say at in the communications bar. So we have a very distinguished panel here to explore these issues with you. Immediately to my left is the Associate Director for Tech Studies at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. He's also one of some of you. He's a GW law student, so that's exciting, and a senior articles editor for the Federal Communications Law Journal, which the communications bar does actively read, so I'm impressed with that. I think Ryan, amongst this panel, despite the employers of the other gentlemen, I think you're most in the media because he's an active writer and frequently published author on tech policy issues. He's been on a number of radio and television programs on tech policy, so you're the talent. So we're looking forward to hearing from you. Barry Olson is the Vice President for Regulatory Affairs at Cox Enterprises. He's senior. He also has FCC experience, as many of us do. Senior legal advisor to Commissioner Adelstein was his position at the FCC before, of course, he had ascended to the A floor from being the policy chief in the Wireless Bureau. So a lot of experience, and he too is a GW Law alum, along with Brian. So there you go, one of yours.
Colonials,
and I am going to be a GW mom when my junior has committed here. So I had to come check out the colors. Is that buff? That's gold, and yeah. So I'm, you know, and figure out ways to stalk my daughter on campus. It's going to be good. So I'm happy to be here. Rick Kaplan also has some FCC experience of note. He's the executive vice president for strategic planning at the National Association of Broadcasters. Like Barry, he was also an advisor to a commissioner, Commissioner Clyburn, but also was the chief counsel to President Obama's first FCC chairman, Jankowski. He first came to the commission to do TV transition, right? But then went up to the A4. But because he was so valued, they made him the Wireless Bureau chief, so kind of a 360 view, at least of the critical bureaus at the FCC, but he's had some interesting experience before that as well, was in the general counsel's office in the House, right, and was a litigator, like we'll get to Jeff, was a litigator as well, and started his own business in PR sports area, so certainly understands the value of that particular stream of content. And then finally we've got Jeff Blum, who is the Senior Vice President and Deputy General Counsel for DISH, overseeing regulatory affairs and litigation. As I noted, he was a litigator in the First Amendment area, copyright, anti-piracy, so on those issues, obviously critical for the media industry. And he, too, has some legal law school connections, taught media law at USC, at the Annenberg School of Journalism, so that's well-regarded, again, in our space. And also, like Ryan here, was an editor in his day, a note editor at the BU Law Journal, so very distinguished panel. So I was going to start off talking about the NPRM on MVPD classification and over-the-top regulation, all the good stuff. But since we did just have a very interesting set of comments from Commissioner Wright, I thought we might open this up by just getting each of your perspectives on what will happen, you know, in the media marketplace if the classification of broadband access does stand through what we expect to be court challenges. So I'll just go down the road and start with you, Ryan.
Well, to the extent that ISPs deliver video over the top, which they all do, Netflix, Amazon, Hulu, Vudu, Crackle, and so forth, the order that the FCC is going to vote on tomorrow and will likely approve, providing it's upheld, would essentially ban them from not just throttling certain specific types of content and applications and destinations and sources, but also would eliminate a content provider from cutting a deal directly with an ISP to prioritize its traffic, or perhaps to exempt its traffic from data caps. This is especially important on the wireless side. This order would also apply to wireless mobile providers. So from a video perspective, to the extent that those of you like me agree with Commissioner Wright's point that by and large these sorts of arrangements are pro-consumer, pro-competitive, this order limits, among other things, the ability of OBDs to strike deals with ISPs. Whether they want to do so and will do so without FCC action is obviously unclear. We've already seen some activity in that area involving music companies and T-Mobile, involving ESPN and AT&T on the wireless side. So there's already evidence that these sorts of deals would exist, and they, in fact, are quite common in other countries.
Okay, well, thank you. Barry, other thoughts on that?
Well, I'd say that the interstate debate, I was doing a lot of advocacy at the floor that the FCC over the last few weeks on net neutrality. And the fascinating discussion is it's no longer about net neutrality, it's all about Title II regulation and pole attachments. And we've got so far afield from the basic core question of open internet principles. Cox, you know, if you talk to our president, you know, we believe in open internet principles, we abide voluntarily by them, obviously we don't abide currently. But the shift to this Title II discussion is incredibly troubling. We also are a phone company. We buy, you know, number of phone service to companies that are customers since 1996 or so. So we're very familiar with the Title II environment, and that's fine for phone service, but it has no place in broadband space. And I think that overhang and the ability for their seats to sort of wield that club will cause folks to definitely rethink how they approach the business. As someone said to me the other day, you know, capital likes to go where it's welcome, and this is not a very welcoming environment for capital.
Well, thankfully, this is one of the few issues where broadcasters are squarely in the middle of, so I don't have a valuable opinion here other than a lot of rhetoric on all sides, and you typically don't know what happens to something until, first of all, the order was not going to come out tomorrow, it'll be what then after that, yes. And then people will read it, digest it, see what happens, and
I think both the net neutrality proceeding and the OTT proceeding, we're going to talk about it, the recognition by Chairman Wheeler that there is a lot of exciting things happening in the video marketplace through over the top. And whether it's through net neutrality, over the top, the mergers, how does the FCC protect consumers and protect, and I think gatekeeper is the right word, and I think Commissioner Wright talked about the framework of when regulation or when action by the government is necessary to prevent those who have the incentive and ability to stifle something really exciting that's good for consumers, has potential to lower prices. And I think the FCC is trying to figure out the best framework to facilitate those positive things that are happening right now.
I think he makes a good point that the environment that has existed for the last 4 years has allowed that to develop. So it's unclear why we need to tweak it.
So as we heard from the Commissioner, don't take prophylactic regulation, prescriptive regulation, if something's not yet broken.
Well, can I just add one point on that? Theoretically, you have the antitrust law, but is a consumer going to file a complaint against Comcast in federal court and have millions of dollars to fight the big ISPs? Sometimes, to protect consumers, you have to have appropriate rules that clearly prohibit the conduct that you're concerned about, and if you rely upon going to court or persuading the DOJ to bring a complaint or the FTC to investigate, that's hard. And most consumers, most smaller companies don't necessarily have the resources in order to do that. There's also the element of time. If you're being sabotaged and there's anti-competitive behavior, are you going to wait 3 years for it to be resolved? By that time, the damage to competition consumers could have already occurred.
Oh, I have to share the mic. Okay.
I sort of disagree with the idea that these rules are necessary because a consumer can file a complaint. We saw with Comcast BitTorrent, although it was the FCC that ultimately issued an order that was invalidated subsequently, it was some engineer, this guy named Rob Topolsky, who figured it out, talked to an AP reporter, and it made national headlines. You don't necessarily need the consumer to take all of the legwork of litigating the complaint or filing with the agency. Just by raising an issue, the FTC and the DOJ can, on their own, launch an investigations. And, of course, if they successfully bring an action against a company for violating the antitrust laws, there can be monetary damages, and that's happened in the past, including in some extreme cases, even criminal penalties for collusion and the like. So it's not necessarily important that every single consumer can bring a complaint that's evaluated by an agency, because a lot of consumers might bring complaints that their bill is too high. Well, every consumer wants something more and wants to pay less. And lots of conduct that they might view as harmful on aggregate is in fact beneficial. And that's why we have some limits on the ability of an agency through administrative adjudication to decide what companies can do, broadly speaking, throughout the economy. There are only these sort of narrow sectors like telecommunications where you have the administrative approach. It seems the rest of the economy seems to work fine without it, and I'm not sure we need as much of it or any of it in the communication sector.
Any rebuttal, Jeff?
Sure. I disagree with Ryan. let me just give a real-world example. The FCC imposed conditions on Comcast and NBC, and Comcast was obligated to offer their NBC programming through over-the-top, relevant to our discussion today. There was an over-the-top provider called Project Concord who believed they were entitled to get the rights from Comcast NBC. Comcast said no and litigated it for 2 years at the FCC. Ultimately, Project Concord was vindicated, but they had spent millions of dollars on outside counsel and lawyers that they went bankrupt. So that delay prevented them from getting access to content that could have offered an alternative to consumers at a lower price, and the process failed to address the very harms of that condition, was to give folks access to content to provide consumers different alternatives and technology at lower prices. So sometimes delay could really matter and could have direct impact on what the merger or what the rules are attempting to achieve.
Thank you. All right. I know some of you are communications lawyers out there, just so I recognize your faces, but I know some of you are not. So just to back up a little bit, Title II refers to the second title in the Communications Act, which was put on the books back in the 30s to deal with common carriers. And it basically requires common carriers to interconnect. They cannot refuse interconnection, and the rates and practices have to be just and reasonable. Now, with the over-the-top proceeding, we're dealing a little bit further down in the Communications Act in Title VI. Title VI deals with cable providers and others. So to set the framework of what the commission proposed, or the chairman proposed, obviously, to try to provide some of the benefits of that MVPD title to over-the-top providers. So perhaps Barry or Rick, you can, or Barry, let's start with you. If you could put on your old GW hat and explain to your fellow students here what is actually at stake in that proposed.
Okay, let me. It depends on your perception of the item. The chairman, I think, has in some remarks sort of indicated this may be the first step in a multi-step process to Jeff's point, to make it easier for over-the-top providers to get access to programming. And he's talked about programming bundles and creating more pressure on existing providers through over-the-top competition. And so maybe making smaller programming packages available over the internet, that type of vision, I guess you could say. The proceeding in and of itself is not nearly as dynamic. It's very in the weeds legally. It talks about the MVP definition, which is, again, the multi-channel video programming distributor definition, which I am no expert on that, but trying to dissect that definition to see if over-the-top services fall within that definition. And then the item suggests probably I think the conventional wisdom is the FCC wants it to fall in there. And once you have MVPD status, that will give you certain rights. Of great interest here would be access to vertically integrated programming. So that's programming that is connected to an existing cable provider. The classic is NBCU. Some programming like Discovery, because of their partial ownership by a cable company, that's another program, vertically integrated programming provider. So that's one element. Another element is retransmission consent. The idea that a broadcaster would have to, correct me if I'm wrong, but a broadcaster would have to negotiate in good faith for that. When that over-the-top provider comes and says, I want to carry your broadcast content, there has to be good faith negotiation. But there's a huge issue, and I'm definitely not the expert on this, around copyright law. It's one thing to be able to get FCC rights to carry broadcast content, but there's a whole set of copyright law with that broadcast content. which probably is a separate question possibly. Is that a good...
That's a
okay, miss anything?
No, I mean,
okay.
Just to fill in that, the second part, Jeff's an expert here as well, but the... Barry's right. All this is in one sentence is about expanding the definition of a MVPD. It has all sorts of consequences, but the day after it's voted on and adopted, which I think in some form or fashion it probably will be, whatever the vote may be, it'll probably be another split vote along partisan lines, which seems to happen a lot at the commission these days. There'll be very little effect initially. It won't really do anything because of the copyright laws Barry alluded to, where there's a compulsory copyright to be able to carry this, all the copyright material as part of that package, and the Copyright Office has held that online distributors are not considered cable companies effectively for the appropriate license, and most likely Congress would have to act here to expand that definition on that side before this had any meaningful impact. I think Chairman Wheeler, trying to read minds is difficult, but my guess is he's trying to kickstart that momentum to see if that can influence what Congress does or the Copyright Office. But again, as Barry said, it is a multi-step process.
Well, so there's perhaps some conflict between the Copyright Act and what the Commission has proposed, at least in terms of implementation. And Jeff, as a copyright litigator and a law professor, can you amplify on that?
Sure. This is just the network programming. So ABC, Fox, CBS, NBC. Under the law today, copyright law, ABC doesn't have to go to Seinfeld and clear the copyright so Seinfeld could be shown on Dish Network. It's a compulsory license that through to the viewer, so ABC doesn't have to go to all the individual production companies. And that is a hurdle, and the system has been in place for over 20 years, and Rick and I disagree in terms of whether the system is working or not, respectfully, because broadcasters ask us for money, and then we want to pay less, and then the programming goes down, and consumers get pissed at us, and then they cancel Dish, they go to DirecTV, so there's an ongoing battle in Congress about whether this overall system is good or not. The specific issue of compulsory license is not addressed by what Chairman Wheeler is proposing. Programmers, vertically integrated providers would have to negotiate on non-discriminatory terms with over-the-top providers. So Discovery would have to offer Amazon or Netflix, if they qualify under this new definition, access to their program. It's not a guarantee that it would be covered, it's just they can't discriminate against the over-the-top provider. So if they give Dish a certain deal, they have to give sort of a comparable deal to an over-the-top provider. But as Barry said, this is limited. I think the press has blown this item out of proportion, saying all of a sudden Amazon and Netflix and everyone's going to have all these programming rights, and that's just not going to be the initial effect if the order as promulgated passes.
So just to briefly get into the weeds, the term MVPD, the first word is multi-channel. So the FCC's proposed rule would do is not classify Netflix and Amazon Instant Video as they currently are as MVPDs because they offer on-demand programming rather than linear programming, where there's pre-scheduled programs that air at different times. So when you think of an you think of what Aereo tried to do unsuccessfully, or what CBS All Access is, albeit with respect to only CBS programming and programming they contracted with, that's the sort of thing that this order would do. For purposes of the copyright discussion, that is indeed a separate issue. The Copyright Office says that if you're an online video distributor, you're not a cable system for purposes of Section 111 of the Copyright Act. So far, at least one appeals court, the Second Circuit, has upheld that on Skidmore deference and said that's the right, that's a persuasive interpretation of the Copyright Act. So under what the FCC is proposing, if you're a linear online video distributor, you not only would have to secure retransmission consent with respect to broadcast programming, until the situation changes with respect to what the Copyright Act means, you'd also have to obtain a copyright license under voluntary terms, which is something that I think would certainly impose some hurdles on linear online video distributors. In turn, I think some of them would love it, and they're already trying. Companies like Aereo and Sky Angel and others would love if they could get this compulsory license. I don't think they should be entitled to it. I think the courts have been correct in rejecting it so far, but that's what they want. And of course, in the online world, Netflix and Amazon, just because I mentioned them, and Google Play and iTunes and so forth, they all clear copyrights to not just their own programming, not just to cable programming, but to broadcast programming. Netflix is reportedly paying $2 million per episode for, I believe, exclusive online rights to the show Blacklist. Amazon had a deal with respect to the show Under the Dome. And again, these are not operating either under the MVPD structure of Title VI of the Communications Act or under the Copyright Compulsory License. These online video distributors are simply clearing copyrights with either the underlying copyright owners or their assignees and representatives, and it seems to be working pretty well. Netflix has 39 million U.S. subscribers. Amazon has 40 million U.S. subscribers for its Instant Video and Prime package. Both of those are bigger than the biggest traditional MVPD, even if you include Comcast, Time Warner, if the merger goes through. And there's lots of other examples of these smaller companies, too. So a lot of folks have both. I have like five different apps on my tablet that I can watch video on. Sometimes it's tough to remember which one I have to choose to watch which program.
Just watch it right now. It's really great.
Multitasking. So things seem to be going pretty well online. It's unclear why the FCC feels the urge to expand this MVPD definition further.
Well, for your members, Rick, I mean, if there was an expanded base of people with compulsory licenses, what does that do for your membership? Is that a burden? Is that more outlets?
Well, that's a complicated question. I think we're nowhere near that happening. A lot of these things intertwine. I think, you know, as far as the commission's current proceeding, we're in favor of the commission taking this step, creating more competition in the MVPD market. I think that's appropriate. The way in which they're doing it, we're not so kosher with. There's what the commission has done is picking and choosing a little bit. So it's not, and I'm sure Barry would agree with this, it's not saying, okay, we want to create more competition on new platforms. We're going to take the regime that Congress set up here and just open it up here. So what the commission did is say, all right, we'll give all these rights, especially program access, as Barry and Jeff talked about. We're also going to give retransmission consent, right, the ability to negotiate for broadcast programming. But we're not going to have any of the obligations, as whether it's exclusivity, must carry, a diverse programming, all this sort of stuff that is part of what Congress set up. And so the FCC has a little bit more work to do. The way I typically describe it is I feel like when I was reading, there's about 30 pages missing from the document. If it's going to do this, it's got to do it like Congress wanted. I mean, that's the thing. The theme of today is just to make sure that the FCC is a creature of Congress and the law sets out what they're supposed to do. And here they sort of forgot about that a bit, but generally we're supportive of the direction they're in.
Well, I thought the proposal did say they were going to subject these new OTT MVPDs with the obligations of being an MVPD, and they listed several, seven, but those are not the good ones?
The complicated thing here is the laws are not written in the most elegant fashion possible. It's not surprising to special law students as we start to get into this stuff. There's the MVPD definition, and so everything that it applies to is now expanded, but there's also lots of stuff. Jeff is more familiar than even I am, but there's things that apply to DBS, things that apply to cable. It says cable, it says DBS. They're slightly different. So MVPD, the way it slices out is anything that definition applies to, but not all of the commission's rules or the laws that Congress set up apply to MVPDs. Specifically, they apply to cable and satellite and separate cables. So it's not about picking and choosing. It's just the FCC needs to open its eyes a little bit broader and say, okay, there are bigger implications here for both cable and satellite.
And what are the obligations and the rights of satellite providers?
There's many obligations that we have. We have public interest set aside where a certain amount of satellite capacity has to be for public interest channels. There's must carry where a broadcaster could basically elect, and we have to carry them at no cost. We have obligations to provide local service throughout the entire country, which is a good thing for consumers, but that is a congressional obligation that we have. There's satellite fees that we have to pay the FCC each year. So there are benefits, but there are also obligations. And I think the item is asking, should over-the-top folks have both the benefits and the obligations?
But in the MVPD context, not the satellite context, obviously.
There's similar obligations. I mean, there's public interest, certain obligations that cable companies have. There's franchising fees. If you're a cable company, you have a lot of state and local regulations in terms of your disclosures and your billing and all those types of things that cable companies are regulated from the 92 Cable Act under.
And Barry, you're going to jump in.
Well, it's a good tee up. Both what they said, and we're probably going to agree on a lot of positions, but come from very different angles. So DBS has a lot of obligations. Cable has a lot more, obviously. And Rick is right. There are 30 pages missing in the item, and I'd say the 30 pages should be addressing the claims of certain, they're calling themselves IPTV providers, like an AT&T or Google Fiber, who are trying to leverage their technology to argue that they shouldn't be subject to certain cable rules, that we believe that's, if the FCC wants to go down this road, it's critical to have regulatory parity. Right now, cable is bearing the burden of way more obligations than anyone else. And I think there's a lot of noise sometimes where everyone, you know, Comcast obviously is the biggest player cable-wise, but there are a lot of smaller cable companies. We're not small, but we're not big either. And I think that sometimes we get sort of sucked along to this vortex of it's cable, it must be something we need to really regulate or impose more obligations on. And when you have other larger companies than us, way larger companies than us, operating without the same regulatory obligations just doesn't make any sense for us.
So it's always easy to blame Congress, but I'll blame Congress here, that a lot of these obligations, the special ones that apply to cable systems, that don't apply to satellite carriers or non-cable, non-satellite MVPDs, a lot of these go back to the 1992 Cable Act, which was basically a bill that assumed cable was a monopoly. This was before Dish, before DirecTV, before Fios, before UVerse. Some of the obligations go before that. So if a regulatory parity is a great thing, but the idea that we should ratchet up the rules for, say, a UVerse and a Fios to up to cable is the wrong approach. It may be all the FCC can do. It can't. I'm not sure it has the authority to just, you know, use something like a forbearance authority to not apply these rules to cable companies. But some of the discussion about extending the traditional rules that apply to cable and satellite elsewhere in the MVPD world troubles me. For instance, things like syndicated exclusivity and network non-duplication, or must carry, which right now in the Act only applies to cable and then carry one, carry all for satellite. So you can envision, if the FCC continues down this path, a situation where an OVD that isn't classified as an MVPD would have to carry certain broadcast networks. Moreover, instead of clearing the copyrights, say, nationwide for a particular program or set of programs, would have to negotiate with each station in each individual market. Now, that's what cable and satellite carriers and facilities-based MVPDs have long done. They're used to it. But in the online world, when you look at companies that don't own facilities, they've never had to do this before. It's unclear why we'd want to extend that burden to them when they seem to be doing relatively well negotiating for rights independently. But if you're going to go down this path, it's unclear why you shouldn't apply these rules to these companies to the extent it makes sense, which is why I think it counsels against the FCC going beyond the traditional facilities-based definition of an MVPD.
Well, my hope is we'll have some questions from the audience to make this a little more interactive and valuable for you. So I'll give you a moment to think of them if you don't have them handy. But so if there's 30 pages missing and this is only piecemeal, I mean, why do you suppose they chose that tact? Is this just a slowly...
And I think it's what I said in the beginning. I think Chairman Wheeler likes over the top. And I could ask the audience this question. Who would like to be able to pick the channels they want to watch and pay just for those channels? Raise your hand. Who would like not to have a term contract where you're locked in for 2 years? Raise your hand. Who would like a lower price for the channel you pay? Raise your hand. Who would like to be able to watch it on your iPad sitting on your couch and, you know, the flexibility to do that? I mean, this is not hard here. This is not rocket science. The rocket scientists. Over the top is good for consumers, and the market is fundamentally changing. Dish launched Sling TV 2 weeks ago, the first true linear channel over the top service. Live ESPN, $20 a month, no term commitment. You can go to your iPhone, iPad right now and download and put your credit card. You can be watching ESPN in 2 minutes. I think Chairman.
Special discount for anyone in the audience.
You will get a 7-day free trial. I think Chairman Wheeler recognizes the importance of over the top. It is something that is exciting. And I think this item is one way that I think he's trying to show the importance of that. I think the other big decision that he's going to have to make, and the commission's going to have to make, is on the Comcast Time Warner merger. Because all these over the top services are going to rely upon a high speed broadband pipe that Comcast Time Warner would control 54% of those broadband connections in the United States. Comcast Time Warner doesn't necessarily want over-the-top to be successful because it competes with their Xfinity bundle. And sometimes you don't necessarily need to regulate to help consumers and protect competition. Sometimes you just need to say no to a merger, and Dish is one of the main merger opponents because we don't think it's good to give one company so much control over the broadband pipe because that could stifle the growing over-the-top market, which we think is good for consumers.
Well, we do have a question here.
Thank you, because you just said it intrigued me because I have a 13-year-old and she was watching some series on Netflix, and then she needed Hulu Plus, and they're very reasonable. They're like $8, $10 a month.
Yes.
And now she's hearing the FTC chairman speak, and I'm writing articles explaining this to the average voters, which are finally understanding that this is an issue, and these laws are being passed before they ever had a say, and they don't even understand the complicated structure. But what you're saying is that with the bundles, like with a Comcast bundle, then you're, with what the gentleman said about being priced out, that you might have to make a decision, do you get Netflix or Hulu? Will they go up in price to that level? That you might have to choose one, and then you have less choice. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying that over the top, since it's new and it's growing, there's going to be a lot of experimentation to figure out what consumers want, what works, what's the pricing, what's the bundle. Ryan has five different apps that he's going to, but he understands technology. But many people don't want to have five apps. So I think, but that's what innovation is all about. That's what competition.
Right, but like when you introduce yourself to an app, sometimes it's 99 cents or free. And yes.
Yes. No, we're saying if the merger goes through, we're concerned that that innovation and that choice may be stifled because all these services are going to rely upon broadband in the hands of one company who doesn't necessarily want those services to be successful. Because Comcast, Time Warner, they want people to buy their Xfinity bundle. They want you paying $300 a month for broadband and video, and if you only have to pay $20 for it over the top, they don't necessarily like that. So what can they do to hurt over the top? And they can do many different things to hurt over the top that lessens consumer choice.
Entrepreneurs and small businesses.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Okay, can I make an observation? So I think one of the things, like going back to the item, I sort of tried to describe it neutrally the first time, so I'll give them more slant from a Cox perspective. Again, I'm wearing sort of the cable hat here, is that, I mean, Jeff is right. I mean, there's a lot of interest in over-the-top as being this potential, you know, white knight coming in. And I would argue that it's a very narrow way to look at it. There are a lot of cable companies who would love to get cheaper, better access to programming. It's not just about over-the-top companies. We're a decent-sized company, but there are a lot of smaller cable guys who have no leverage in programming companies. We're concerned about something about volume discounts, the price that we pay for programming versus the larger MVPDs. So to say it's just over the top being able to provide smaller bundles, that's really the trick. If there's a question about programming access, programming bundles, sort of the entire market, let's look at the entire market. Let's not just focus on how can we give over the top guys a leg up over existing MVPDs. And that's what we're concerned this proceeding is doing. It's disadvantaging us to the detriment of someone else.
I'll also add another perspective that's rarely talked about here, which is, you know, one concern with putting all our eggs in the over-the-top basket, and whether it's cable or, it's just you're really riding on one infrastructure. So you're saying we're going to all of this broadband infrastructure. That's where we're counting everything. So we're sending everyone there. So Jeff's idea is to send everyone, but now we got to regulate, you know, really heavily the ones we're sending. So over-the-top's going to send everyone to the broadband pipe, right? Not to the satellite service, but the broadband pipe. So, but you know, someone who represents broadcasters, there is an infrastructure already in place in the country that actually can supplement, you know, what Ryan's using there, which is free over-the-air TV that has all the network programming that somebody can watch just by, you know, tuning in. And so that's an infrastructure I think that should be not overlooked, because if we just let that wither over time, we are going to be all reliant on the broadband pipe, and that's going to be it. And so it's very important to look at the various intermodal competitive forces as time goes on. There's a big sweep to go this direction, but I think we should be careful about the way we look at them.
And I agree with Rick. I mean,
he literally took the microphone away.
Because I was agreeing with you. Over the top, I think primarily, at least initially, it's for 18 to 35-year-olds who are cord cutters or cord nevers, who are not paying for a traditional MVPD cable or satellite bundle, who want options to watch really good content on television, but through an over-the-top service. So I think there's a whole market of the younger generation who primarily lives in the urban centers that has access to high-speed broadband that these types of over-the-top services primarily appeal to, because they're easy to use at a lower cost, more flexibility, and companies that sort of stay still and don't plan for the future, they're gone. Blockbuster, AOL. I mean, you have to figure out what the future is, and you have to address a problem. And the problem is the younger generation is not wanting to pay $200 for traditional cable or satellite. Over the top provides them the ability to enter the TV universe and pay for content, which helps, you know, rich members, it helps content providers, it helps new businesses who are doing over the top, gives consumers greater optionality. So that's something that I think is exciting. And traditional cable or satellite, it's here. There's 100 million TV households. It's a major industry. We have 14 million satellite subscribers. And I don't think that's going away. But there is another market, another generation of folks who could benefit, and over the top gives them that option.
Yes.
I have a question about scalability. The proposal, if we're doing talking about broadband here, is it scalable to other kinds of technology, or is it intended to restrict these ideas to, is it wedded to a particular technology, or is it scalable? Because certainly there's going to be other ways of transmitting data or information. You have to anticipate that the technology is going to change. Is it scalable?
I think it could be. I mean, the trouble in telecom technology, this is what lawmakers struggle with all the time, is keeping up, right? So it takes so long to pass something you do, and then the technology is already ahead of you. So there'll always be that inherent struggle, but I think what the FCC is trying to do here is say, okay, we recognize this new technology is out there. Let's expand the definition and include them. And then if something we haven't thought of yet is here in 5 years, they could certainly do that again. Again, the laws aren't elegant, so the way they're doing it only affects one slice of the entire pie, so that's troubling to some degree. But I guess it's scalable in terms of you can continue to either change the law or expand the definition. So in that sense, I would say it probably is.
But that's why I like compulsory licensing, because it doesn't matter what the medium of transmission is. License or compulsory license like music, and it doesn't matter what format it's in. So that's my
question. Yes, Paul.
Thanks, guys. That's really good. Good question. The Title VI, which would apply now, presumably to the top services, they've used other provisions that are there to deal with, like, exclusive MDU arrangements that was that, and the telcos brought that actually. And they used it to get around the terrestrial delivery loophole on satellite delivery programming. So there are protections there that an MVPD can bring against a cable operator, right, for unfair methods of competition or unfair practices, whatever the language is. How does that apply in this context? If an over-the-top provider thinks that the cable operator, the incumbent, is doing something that they don't like,
well, I'm not sure I have an answer to your question. I can't recall that part of the. I mean, I would argue that Title VI should apply to over-the-top providers. There's some questions in the proceeding about whether they can opt in or opt out. I think that's not the right question. I mean, if you're going to be an over-the-top provider, and it's going to be defined as MVPD, they got to be subject to the same things that the other MVPDs are subject to. There should be no reason to sort of pick and choose. It's not right. We've had consistent concerns with AT&T and some others who don't believe Title VI applies to them as well. And that's crazy. I mean, AT&T is one of the biggest telecom company in the world after this transaction, or at least in the United States. And they're saying they're not subject to Title VI. So there are existing problems of regulatory parity, and I think the FCC is going to compound those problems by not addressing them in this item and sort of allow over-the-top guys to pick and choose. That just creates further problems for existing MVPDs and cable providers.
But this doesn't create a new avenue for an over-the-top provider to complain about how a cable operator is running its network?
Well, maybe under Title II, that's maybe more Title II question tomorrow.
The 628?
Yeah, no, right. But you're saying if over-the-top guys are complaining about some sort of broad, it's a broadband service, and broadband service is now a title, could be Title II tomorrow, right? So, I mean, it could be authorized. I don't know.
They could say you're marketing a, let's say they bundle a cable operator, so you get 50 megabits at this price, and you put up $5 for controlling our video service. Now, if you're Dish, they're trying to market a new old top service, but you say, wait a minute. They're going to toss in this thing as a freebie, basically, and kill my laptop. Is that a fair thing to do? I mean, is that something that you could complain about as an unfair method of competition under Title VI?
I don't know. No, but I do think the Title II aspect is there as well. It might be both.
Yeah.
Fair disclosure to the audience, that gentleman served in the Media Bureau back in the day. As a matter of fact, the bells are chiming, but do you want to ask your question? I saw you had your hand up. Yes.
Oh, sorry.
No. Well, I think to be timely, we will wrap because it's 2 o'clock. And please join me in thanking this very distinguished.